We're moving forward in the book of Daniel as an intro to the book of Esther. And the story we're about to read, the story of Nebuchadnezzar, that's the story that's really the backdrop to the obsession which will take hold of Nebuchadnezzar and those that follow him all the way through Ahasuerus, the obsession with the temple and the Mashiach, the Jewish Messiah. So it's 2 years after Nebuchadnezzar has destroyed the temple, and he has a dream, and he's very upset because he cannot remember the dream nor its interpretation. So he summons all his wise men. Now remember, he had four top wise men. I do not know why he did not summon them, but his four top wise men were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So I don't know why he didn't summon them. So he calls in his wise men, and he tells them, I dreamt a dream, and now I'm all upset. I want to know what I dreamt. So his advisors, they tell him, long live the king. Tell us your dream, we'll give you the interpretation. They didn't understand what he was saying. So he said, I forgot it. So if you don't tell me the interpretation of the dream and its interpretation, I will cut you down to different limbs. I will segment you off into limbs. And your houses will turn into dumps. But if you do tell me the dream and its interpretation, good news, I'll give you gifts, I'll give you honor, I'll give you wealth, I'll give you a lot. So just tell me the dream and its interpretation. So now they answer a second time. They say, Your Majesty, just tell us the dream and we'll tell you the interpretation. And the king says, these are his wise men, right? And he says, now I really know that you guys deserve it, because you see, I forgot the dream and you're still asking me to tell you the dream. So now you have until tonight to tell me the dream and its interpretation. And if not, then I've just decreed that you will be executed. So I have a good way of verifying that you'll tell me the truth, because you obviously won't try to tell me a lie as to what I'm dreaming, what I've dreamt. And if you try, because I know what I dreamt and didn't, and if you try to tell me a lie, so then I will certainly execute you. So now all you have to do is tell me the dream and interpretation. And so his Chaldeans, his advisors, say to him, Your Majesty, there is no man on dry land who could tell you such a thing. Look around. No king ever asked his wise men such a request. There was once upon a time a man who could answer such questions. His name was the Kohen Gadol in the Jews' temple. He had prophetic visions. He could tell you such a thing. But you destroyed his temple. Notice how they're trying to shift the blame. There could have been a solution if not for what you did 2 years ago. You destroyed his temple, and so there's no one left who can tell you such a thing. No human, only an angel could tell you such a thing. And so the king gets really upset. He says to them, you gave me the advice to destroy that temple. You are the wise men who told me to go and destroy the temple. And he calls his executioner with great anger and says to him, start executing all the wise men of Babylon. We're not waiting till tonight. And so the executioner starts taking them up to the gallows, one by one executing them. And he goes to summon Daniel and his friends. And so Daniel speaks intelligently to Arioch, the chief executioner. And he draws him into a conversation. And he says to him, I know you're in charge from the order of the king, but why is there such a brazen decree coming out from the king? So Arioch tells Daniel what happened. He tells him, you know, you weren't there, but this was the conversation. So Daniel says, I want to go talk to the king. He goes before the king and he says, give me time to bring you an answer. I want some time. I will get you an answer. And then Daniel goes back home. He summons Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He sends word to them that this is what's going on. Our lives are on the line. Go pray that Hashem should reveal this secret to me, so that we won't die with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So Daniel has a dream, and Hashem reveals to him what Nebuchadnezzar dreamt and its interpretation. And Daniel blesses Hashem. He gets up and says, Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevorach Lolam Ulolmei Omaya. This is the first place it's written here in the book of Daniel. Hashem, whose wisdom and might is His, and He is the one who changes times, and He removes kings and establishes kings. You'll see the dream is all about which kings will be removed and which will be established. So that's why this blessing is fitting. Hashem gives wisdom to those that are wise and knowledge to those that have understanding. He reveals the secrets. He knows what's in the darkness because light is with Him. To you, the God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise because you're the wisdom and greatness you've given me. It's yours. You've given me. You've revealed to me this secret. And then Daniel rushes to Arioch, the chief executioner. Here we see Daniel's kindness. He doesn't wait for the king to hear his interpretation, to validate it, and then tell Arioch, stop executing. He first runs to Arioch and says, stop killing. Bring me before the king. I'm going to tell him the solution. So Arioch rushes up to the king. Now listen closely to what Arioch says. I found the Jew. I found one of the exiled Jews who's going to tell you the solution. Notice how he's trying to take credit for the solution. So the king turns to Daniel and he says,
the king already knows.
Daniel was asked for some time. Maybe other people also asked for some time. But the king tells Daniel, now remember, what does Daniel mean? My judge is Hashem. And what did the king change his name, or what did his officer change Daniel's name to be? Belshazzar, his wisdom, Chatzar's wisdom, comes from my idol Baal. So he says, can you tell me the dream that I saw and its interpretation? And Daniel says,
I'm sorry, you changed Daniel's name to Belshazzar?
Belshazzar.
Isn't that the name of the next king?
There was a king Belshazzar, correct. There's going to be a king who has the name Belshazzar, yeah. It happens to be slightly different that here there is a tet. That's Belshazzar, and this is Belteshazzar. There's a T there. So Daniel says, what you're asking, this secret, there are no wise men who could tell you. But there is a God in heaven, and He knows all secrets. And what He let you know in this dream is what's going to happen till the end of time. What happened in your sleep, you saw what you were pondering all day long. All day long you were wondering what's going to happen. Here Daniel reveals to us an insight that the Gemara quotes, that we tend to dream the things that bother us during the day. The Gemara says one of the rabbis was approached by a king and he said to him, tell me what I'm going to dream about tonight. So the rabbi did a little research, and he discovered that the king was concerned about a certain city-state of his that was having a war, and he was concerned what would be the outcome of the war, and that's what was bothering him. So he said to him, tonight you're going to dream about the war with that city-state, and you're going to dream about how they're going to win. So the guy kept thinking about that all day. That's what he's going to dream about. And that night, boom, that's what he dreams. So the Gemara says, what you think about by day is what you'll dream about by night. So that's what you're worried about. You've built up this empire. You want to know what's going to be with it. So it's not because I'm so smart that I know the answer to your question, but Hashem in heaven wants to reveal to you what's going on. So that's why I know the answer. In heaven they know, and so they've given you the answer. What you saw is a huge idol with a tremendous basis, and its countenance was awesome. And it can be seen from a distance. And it was awe-inspiring. And this idol had a head of gold. Fine gold. Its chest and arms are of silver. Its stomach, its thighs were of copper. And its legs were of metal. The feet were a mixture of metal and earthenware. And then you saw how a rock suddenly fell off, it doesn't say from where, but a rock fell down, and it wasn't done by any human action, but suddenly a rock came flying and knocked the feet of this idol, and it flattened out the metal and the earthenware, And then everything became squashed, even though the rock fell only on the feet. The whole idol became quashed all the way down till it became the size of a tiny chaff, the chaff that comes off, you know, like you have in popcorn. You have this little film, that's the chaff that you have, it's similar to the chaff you have on wheat. And a wind came and blew it away. So here this tremendous idol that filled the screen, this tremendous idol that was so awe-inspiring, became this slight little film, and then a wind blew it away, and you couldn't even notice that it was ever there, and the stone that had knocked the idol's feet became a tremendous mountain, and it encompassed all of earth. That's the dream. Now the interpretation. You, the king. Well, the king of kings, Hashem, he has the kingdom of heaven. He gave you a powerful and strengthened kingdom. He gave you great honor and wealth. And you control everything. All of planet Earth, wherever people live. You're that head of gold. You have such an awesome kingdom. And after you, there will be a kingdom that's less than you. And after that will be a third kingdom that's less than that. That's the second kingdom is the silver that's less than gold, and then the copper that's less than the silver. You guys know how much is an ounce of silver today? How much does... It's around $16.50 an ounce of silver. How much is an ounce of gold? Right, approximately $1,200. So how much more is gold more valuable than silver? How much? Try 80.
How much is silver?
Silver is $16 and gold is $1,200. So it's almost 100 times as valuable. So, it's so I don't know if it's always been that the difference is that great. I'm saying there must have been a time when silver was like $5 and gold was $200.
$40?
Ah, yeah? It's before my time. That's still, you're saying it was 20 to 30 times more valuable. Not 80. Okay.
You know, Yaakov.
Interesting. Okay.
Very speculative.
So. No, but still, it's a difference. It's not twice as much. It's 20 times as much. That's what I'm saying. That's why I quoted the numbers. So there's going to be a kingdom that's less than you, and then a kingdom that's less than them, and then there's going to be a fourth kingdom, like the metal. And just as metal is used when you want to pound all these different fine metals, you use metal in order to pound them, so too this fourth kingdom is going to be pounding everyone else. And then you saw the legs, the feet of the legs were made of silver and earthenware. The kingdom's going to be divided. Things won't be as united, just like metal and earthenware don't mix. So which kingdom is that? Which kingdom is that? What are they talking about? No, so the head of gold is the Babylonian Empire. The silver chest is the Persian Mede Empire. The copper is the Greek Macedon Empire. And the final, the legs, is going to be the Roman and Muslim, the Christian and Muslim world. They're always in unison. They're always pairs. That's why I said the Babylonian and the Chaldean Empire, the Persian Mede Empire, the Greek Macedonian Empire, and finally the Christian Muslim Empire. But I don't know, where do Christians and Muslims unite? I guess it's only the United States and Russia. They don't seem to unite too much, right?
They both hate Jews.
They both hate Jews. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what that's a reference to, this kingdom where they'll seem united. Later on, Daniel will come back to that fourth kingdom where people think they're united and then they discover that part of the kingdom is not united with them. So some people will claim that it's the Muslims in the United States today.
You can temporarily unite, though, against the
comment. I mean, even Israel with Saudi Arabia now would say against Iran, even though it's not public. You can have, you know, the friend of mine was the enemy of Hezbollah.
Oh, yeah, enemy of friend. Yeah.
Right, but he's talking about a situation where the people, we'll see later on, he'll get back to that, where within the people you have another people that they think have blended, and then a time will come they'll suddenly realize they're not one of us. We thought they were one of us. He's talking about a situation where you have a whole people, a whole country, where they let in another people. And those people, they thought blended in well with them. They thought they were one of theirs already, only to discover that they're not. And that's why he's comparing it to silver and earthenware that will never fuse. They'll never connect, really. You could put nice engravings on the earthenware. You could put gold engravings, but it'll never become one.
But this is not included in the Book of Prophets because it didn't apply for all generations, correct or
no? No, that next class, remind me. We'll discuss that for a few minutes. So I'll quote you the pasuk: "V'dichazayta parzel amarav ba'chasavtina." When you saw metal mixed with earthenware, mitarvin le'evan bezra anashah. They will mix with other people, with other humans. We're on pasuk mem gimel. Ve'lo levin davkin denaim dena. But they won't really connect one with one another. They'll marry into other nations, but they won't really become one with them. And so they will remain their own religion even as they intermarry into other religions.
That's happened. When Bosnia, they were butchering each other not that long ago. Same family. So, I mean,
really?
I mean, after a certain amount of time, you will not know your own. You'll forget who you were. But if it's only a few generations, sadly, I mean,
wow, okay. So in this time period, when the Fourth Empire is still around, Hashem will establish another kingdom, the kingdom of Hashem, a kingdom that will never be undone, a kingdom that will never be taken down. And that kingdom will ultimately take down all the other kingdoms. And that kingdom will be eternal. And that's how you saw from this mountain came off a rock and no one seemed to knock it down. But that's the idea, that rock represents the Mashiach. And it bashed it all down into one small thing. Hashem, who is awesome above everything, he revealed to you what's happening after your time. You should know your dream's true and its interpretation is true. And Nebuchadnezzar knows the dream is true. That's what he saw. He bows to Daniel. And his first thought, and here we see how smart Nebuchadnezzar is. Nebuchadnezzar orders them to libate and bring sacrifices before Daniel. He says, he is a god. He is an angel. Now what's he thinking?
Wait, Daniel's an angel of God?
Correct. What is Nebuchadnezzar thinking? He is only hearing the interpretation, and he's already thinking that, let me see how to bring him down. Let me see how to knock him down. And that's going to be his obsession. From the time Daniel gives this interpretation to Nebuchadnezzar, the obsession of Nebuchadnezzar and then Belshazzar and then Ahasuerus is repeatedly, how do I bump off the Jews? If they're telling me that ultimately all these kingdoms are leading to a messianic period in which the Babylonian Empire will not rule, so then everything that comes to an end is already tainted. Part of the difficulty man has with enjoying life is that somewhere deep down inside, man knows it's going to be followed by death. The idea that the world is finite limits one's capacity to enjoy. If you believe in an afterlife, so death is not the end of the world. Excuse the pun. And then you can deal with it, and then you can enjoy life. If there is no afterlife, so then it's more difficult to enjoy, because at the end of the day, you know, at some point, this is all going to pass. Nebuchadnezzar has the same difficulty with all of his life and accomplishments. If at the end of the day, it's all going for naught. So Nebuchadnezzar and then his followers down to Ahasuerus, they're all going to be obsessed with this. And it all starts here, with Daniel's interpretation. So Nebuchadnezzar says, now I know it's true. Your God is the most powerful. He's in charge of all kings. He's in charge of all forces. If you were able to tell me such a secret. And so he gives him great gifts and he places him in charge of Babylon. He appoints Daniel his top advisor with governing responsibilities throughout Babylon. And Daniel asks to have three assistants. And here again you see the wisdom of Daniel, that he's ensuring that he has men to work with. He asks that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah be with him in the job. And that's one of the greatness of great leaders, that they're always quick to ensure they have people to work with. If you're going to do it alone, you're very limited in your capacity in life. The second you can delegate, you become less and less limited. So that's step one. Now Nebuchadnezzar starts asking himself, how do I ensure to bring down the Jews? The only way I have a future is if I could bring down the Jews. And his decision is that he will erect a great idol and force all the Jews to bow to it. And in so doing, he will slowly pull them away from their religion. And his intention is also to arouse the wrath of Hashem against the Jewish people. And he is successful. Nebuchadnezzar will summon all the Jews to a great valley, erect a tremendous idol, and then tell them all to bow. And most of them will. And that is the second backdrop to our scene of Ahasuerus, of Megillas Esther, because when the Jews bow down to that idol in heaven, Hashem says, be gone with them. If they're willing to bow to an idol, that's the basis for the decree of Ahasuerus. This is step two in setting up the scene for our story. We'll pick up here, Bezat Shem, after